Welcome, everybody. Welcome to church. Who's glad to be here? Anybody? Okay, two or three people. All right, a few people. Good. Welcome. So if you're kind of new, maybe you're visiting with us or you've been away for most of the summer on holiday and you're just coming back, for these 6 weeks of the school summer holiday, we've been doing something quite different to what we normally do. We've been doing a series called Cinema Church. And each week, what we do is we show a nice long clip from usually a popular movie, different types of movies. We've done Ant-Man, we've done Casablanca, we've done Infinity Wars, and today we're doing WALL-E. Now, WALL-E was a 2008 Pixar movie. It received one of the highest critical, more critical praise, I should say, than just about any movie I know of. I think it had, at one point at least, it had 98% on Rotten Tomatoes website. And if you ever check ratings on Rotten Tomato websites, it's like, if you get 98% is impossible. Like, even good movies get like 50%. People love going on Rotten Tomatoes and talking about how terrible a movie was. But this, WALL-E got 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a very, if you've never seen it before, it needs just a little explanation. It is an animated movie, and it is futuristic, but it's more than futuristic, it's dystopian. Now, normally, nowadays, when people say, oh, it's a dystopian film, it usually involves zombies and people living underground, and it's kind of really dark and gritty. And at first, when you watch this film seems to have none of that. In fact, it's this beautiful, futuristic world of humanity living in like a space cruise. Like, have you ever gone seen these holiday cruise ships? It's like a holiday cruise ship. It's just an outer space cruise ship. But everything begins to change when a singular robot named WALL-E comes from Earth, gets a lift on a rocket from Earth, which has been deserted for hundreds of years because the environment was ruined. And he gets a ride on a rocket, and this robot from Earth comes up into this kind of utopian cruise spaceship, and all of a sudden things begin to change, and this world that seems so idyllic, seems so utopian, isn't quite what we first think it is. Some might ask the question, why have we done this series? Well, there's one very practical reason. A lot of our Sunday school teachers have been away for the summer, and so we kind of have this all-age service. Now, sometimes all-age services means it's just dumbed down. Adults think, oh, this is nothing. This is just for like three-year-olds, right? Nothing for me. We've tried to make this for everybody. We show a clip, and then we actually really want to think and have a conversation about it. Guys, have you been enjoying these cinema series? Have you been liking watching these clips? Yeah? This is great. Yeah, they like the beanbags. So I've had some people say they want to keep the beanbags after the cinema series. We're going to have to watch. In fact, I counted heads this morning. Do you guys know we have 25 people under the age of 18 with us this morning? Yeah, that's wonderful. I want you to know, if you're in here and you're under the age of 18, you're not just the church of tomorrow, you're the church of today. This isn't your future church, this is your church today. We welcome you, and we want to empower you guys to be able to make this your church and be at home in this place. And we value your feedback. We value your participation. And not only for you guys who are 18, I really want to thank particularly some of the older people in our congregation who have been working so hard to help welcome the younger people in our midst. From the Sunday school volunteers to especially those doing a lot of the construction and the building and the renovating upstairs for our Sunday school facilities. There have been people the last few months who have given just countless hours and a countless amount of effort. I'm not going to name them because they don't like to be embarrassed in front. But you guys, some of you have been putting a lot of hours up there. You know who you are. And we appreciate it. And, you know, this is the fruit of your labor. So thank you. So anyway, I'm not going to talk much longer right now. We're going to show the clip. And afterwards, I'm going to come up and say, why are we watching this? What does this have to do with the Bible? What does this have to do about Jesus? Well, we'll have that conversation in just a minute. But for now, please enjoy this clip from the film WALL-E. Okay. You know, the hardest part in preparing for this was to figure out where to end the clip, because if I had the opportunity, we would have watched the whole thing. It's in my personal view, it's just that good a film. So each weekend, people in throughout the world stream to Hollywood, to their local cinema. It could be argued that Hollywood and other national film industries probably have the biggest pulpit, or in some ways the biggest church throughout the world. There's no other church that draws millions and millions of people to come and hear messages that influence how we see the world, what we think about faith, what we think about relationships. And every weekend we go, whether we're conscious of it or not, we go and we sit, and these messages and the images influence the way we see the world. So for that reason, it's good, especially if you claim to be a follower of Christ, that when we watch a movie, that when we see a work of art of any sort, we kind of see it then through the lens of Scripture. And that's what we're going to do right now. First of all, we see a world here in WALL-E that is filled with pleasure, but empty of meaning. And I think for a long time, especially here in the West, in the sort of liberal democracy countries that we're in, this has sort of been the direction we've been headed in. It's interesting, this film was made in 2008, before most people even had a smartphone. The first iPhone came out in 2005. And in 2008, kind of walking around with the smartphone was still, you were still sort of an early adapter. Still, most people didn't have these screens in front of them all the time, like we do today. We kind of watch it today, and to be honest, it's not as weird as it was 11 years ago when this film came out. When this film came out 11 years ago, people were like, no, that'll never be the future. People walking around all day with a screen in front of their face, no. But not 100 years later, but just 11 years later, all of a sudden it begins to look a lot more like reality than we would have thought when this first came out. So you have this world, and it's kind of very utopian. And in some ways, since the end of the Cold War, I was at a barbecue yesterday, some of our neighbors on the other side of Fairfield. And I was talking to one guy who actually grew up in Moscow. He's 38 years old, and he still remembers the tanks coming through Moscow as a boy when, you know, there was the fall of the Soviet Union, and he was telling me what it was like. And we were both talking. We were roughly the same age. I'm 40. He was 37 or 38. And it became clear. We were both said, you know what, people younger than us don't really remember much of the Cold War. They don't really remember the whole Soviet. I have a younger brother, 5 years younger than me. He has no memory of the Cold War. He has no memory of the Soviet Union, what that was like. And we're talking about how different the world has been since then. Really, since the fall of the Soviet Union in 1990, there's sort of been this confidence that sort of liberal democracy and pleasure and just having a nice, comfortable world to live in, that was the inevitable future. It was almost like Starbucks has become the temple of worship for over the last 30 years. You kind of go into this place, you get a nice comfortable drink, nice comfortable chair, music in the background. You can be by yourself. You can be surrounded by other people on their devices and their screens. And so there are other people there, and yet you're on your own just enjoying this drink, reading your book, being on your screen. If you want to be with a friend, that's fine. And it almost has this aura of worship about it. There's flyers on the wall for yoga classes and folk bands and all the rest of it. And it's almost like that sort of encapsulated. That was sort of the vision of where we thought society was going. And this movie sort of paints that picture really well. This is our future. All of us flying around on nice, comfortable chairs, grossly overweight, not having to talk to people, just having a screen in front of us all day, and having a happy, comfortable life. One of the things we see about this film is, though it is very comfortable, there's all these nice little trivial joys, it really has no meaning to it. People aboard this ship, they have comfortable, nice lives. No one lacks for food. No one's starving to death. but the lives are empty and hollow. It reminded me of something that a guy named Neil Postman said at the end of the 20th century. He was writing a book, and in his book, he was comparing two earlier 20th century dystopian novels. One was something called 1984. Now, if you're a bit older, maybe you had to read 1984 in school. It was written originally in 1948, and it was a prediction. So this guy wrote a book in 1948, and he predicted by the year 1984 that the whole world would be sort of this communist, Soviet, oppressive, tyrannical empire. If you ever saw the movie Terminator 2, it's sort of that sort of vision, like the robot elite are going to oppress everything. Big Brother will be controlling you. And Neil Postman writes a book comparing that novel with another book, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, which was also a futuristic dystopian novel, but of a very different sort. And here's what he writes. He says, "We have forgotten that alongside Orwell's dark vision of 1984, there was another, slightly older, slightly less well-known, equally chilling. Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Contrary to common belief, even among the educated, Huxley and Orwell did not prophesy the same thing. Orwell warns that we will be overcome by an externally imposed oppression. But in Huxley's vision, no big brother is required to deprive people of their autonomy, maturity, and history. As he saw it, people will come to love their oppression, to adore their technologies that undo their capacities to think. What Orwell feared was those who would ban books. What Huxley feared was that there would be no reason to ban a book, for there would be no one who wanted to read one. Orwell feared those who would deprive us of information. Huxley feared those who would give us so much that we would be reduced to passivity and egoism. Orwell feared that the truth would be concealed from us. Huxley feared that the truth would be drowned in a sea of irrelevance. Orwell feared that we would become a captive culture. Huxley feared that we would become a trivial culture. In short, Orwell feared that what we hate will ruin us. Huxley feared that what we love will ruin us." And Postman argues that it was Huxley who was more accurate in his prediction of the future than Orwell. And this film, WALL-E, really it paints an incredible picture of that. It's not a Terminator tyranny, it's a candy floss tyranny, where people are sort of seduced and held captive, not by pain, but by pleasure. And they just exist in front of these screens all day. It's not even having human interaction. I thought it was kind of interesting, you know, the line from these people get off their screens and they discover, oh, I didn't know we had a pool. You know, they had no idea that it was even there, that other people were even there. A lot of times, because of the world we live in, people suffer from a lack of meaning. There's a world full of pleasure but lack of meaning, and this results in something called spiritual boredom. This can happen in the church among Christians just as well as among anyone else. Jesus talked a bit about this when he was calling forth disciples. He said he was giving an illustration actually of plants in life, which is very much a part of this movie. And he was talking about different plants that would grow up spiritually. But there'd be one type of plant that would be choked by weeds and thorns. And he says, the worries of this age, the seduction of wealth, and the desires for other things enter in and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. A lot of times this can happen to us, even as followers of Jesus, that we meet Jesus in some pretty significant and powerful ways. We're like, right, I'm going to be a follower of Jesus, and I'm going to let him change my life, and I'm going to make a difference in the world. And yet before we know it, we get seduced into this sort of candy floss tyranny where everything is just really comfortable, really nice, and we get distracted by so many things, so many worries, so many cares, so many desires. That really sums up so much of modern culture. Another big theme of this film It's not just our comforts and our pleasures that distract us from meaning, but in that, there's this whole disconnectedness. Oh, if you watch the whole movie, and we saw a little bit of it in the clip, but hands play a really big, important role. I don't know if you saw that. Kind of at the beginning, you saw two humans looking out the window, and they touched hands, and they're almost shocked, like that's something they had never done. And then you see Wally and Ava as robots, sort of their hands touching. These people exist on their chairs just in front of the screens the whole day. They don't have meaningful contact with other people. And that's another part of sort of a decadent society, of a distracted society. Here in the UK, the two biggest health challenges to men are one being overweight, obesity, but the other is loneliness. One is a physical ailment, the other is a psychological ailment. In fact, loneliness here in the UK peaks at the age, supposedly, of 35. So if you're anywhere near your mid-30s, and especially if you're married with kids, on the UK average, you're one of the most, you're potentially one of the most lonely people out there. Women also suffer with loneliness, but men seem to have it to a higher degree. Over 2.5 million men in the UK say they have no close friends. Imagine that. Then maybe that describes you. Maybe you're sitting there thinking, you know what? I'm not sure I have any close friends. But loneliness is a big thing. They're so caught up with their comforts, their pleasures, just existing. They don't have any deeper relationships. They don't have people they can go to for those meaningful conversations. And a lot of this movie kind of bemoans the fact that we've forgotten how to have long-term, deeper friendships, meaningful friendships, where we talk about more than just the weather and how you're doing. Yeah, I'm fine. Everything's fine. And actually, we go below the surface to actually share our lives together. The Bible talks a lot about this right at the beginning. I don't know if you picked up the play on Adam and Eve here. There's a lot of biblical symbolism in this movie. One, of course, is the idea of Noah. The earth is destroyed, and so people are off in the ark, this giant boat. And just like Noah released the white dove to go and bring back a plant to the ark to let them know that the earth was livable again, so this spaceship sends out this little white robot to find a plant on earth, bring it back, and know that they can head on home. There's a little bit of Noah, but there's also a bit of Adam and Eve. Wally is the only robot, kind of this, if you will, a male robot, there on the planet. And then Eve comes down, and she becomes his companion. This is what the Bible says. It says, "Then the Lord God said, 'It is not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper as his complement.' Then the Lord God made the rib and he had taken from the man into a woman and brought her to the man." Now, of course, on one level, this speaks about marriage, but it's much more than just that. It's all human, meaningful human relationships. It's friendships. It's family relationships that actually work. I know we probably all have tons of dysfunctional family relationships, but sometimes we have family relationships that work and have depth and meaning and they're healthy. Sometimes it's a romantic relationship. Sometimes it's platonic. But God says it's not good that man should be alone. It's not enough just to have a nice house and a nice salary and to be able to tick all the boxes of success if we don't actually, if we're not actually connected with other human beings on a deeper level. And kind of one of the last, there's a few big themes in this film, but one of the others is this idea of redemption from another world. People are lost in their triviality. They're lost in sort of this empty existence of just pleasures, living, being comfortable on their chairs, not even really being able to walk, just living on their screen. But all of a sudden, this robot comes from another world. And he invades their world, so to speak. He teaches them about love. He brings life. He kind of dies in a way and then comes back again. And he comes in order, what? To bring them to their true home. This is a big idea of the movie, that we need a redemption external to us. We can't be our own redeemers. We need something from the outside to break into this ship of human modernity and kind of break in and show us something about love, show us something about life. Someone who can actually bring us to that home that we were meant to live in. Okay. I want to give a couple challenges to us. So here's some homework. What can we do? If you're serious about being a follower of Jesus, if you decided, right, I'm going to be a Christian, I want to be a follower of Jesus, I don't want to be just like the rest of society, sort of carried around on this cruise ship where all that matters is pleasure, but my life is empty of meaning. Because guys, if you do nothing, if you just live your life on cruise control, if we just live our lives without being intentional and making hard choices, that's what we end up like. We just end up with a very shallow life. Most of you, if I were to say, do you want that? No, I don't. You don't want that. Yes, you want to have pleasure, but you want to have more than that. You want to have meaning. You want to have meaning to your life as well. Well, there's a couple of ways that Jesus calls us, a couple of things we can do on a regular basis to ensure that we don't end up with this trivial life. And here's the first thing. Challenge one, protect yourself from an auto takeover. You kind of see this in the film that at first everything looks wonderful and it's this, like I said, a candy floss tyranny, yet but you scratch below the surface and you start asking some deeper questions and you start searching for meaning, and all of a sudden you realize that there's something a little more sinister going on. You know, living on the ship is great unless you want to go contrary to auto. And if you do that, all of a sudden you're going to have opposition. And it's hard. How many of you have thought in the past, if you're a Christian, you thought, right, I want to be a Christian that gets to know his Bible. Like, I want to read my Bible on a regular, maybe even a daily basis. Or I want to be a Christian who really knows how to pray. I want to pray for friends, and I want to pray for people in the leadership, and I want to pray for this world. And you kind of start off to do that, and all of a sudden, it seems like a good idea, but then you have all this opposition out of nowhere. It's like, right, yeah, I'll get up 20 minutes early in the morning before I begin my day, or maybe 20 minutes at night after the kids go to bed. Right, I'm going to have a little time reading the Bible and a little time praying, talking to God, getting to know who God is. I'm going to do that. How many of you have had that idea and then it just didn't work? Yeah, it's like, whoo, all of a sudden you realize there is an auto. Now, the Bible calls auto the world. That's what the New Testament refers to as auto. There is this spirit called, there's just the world. There's this force that is nice and sweet and pleasant on the outside, but as soon as you get serious about adding depth to your life, about getting to know God better, about seriously praying for people, about getting to know the Bible, all of a sudden, you have this auto who kind of, at first, he kind of chuckles at you. He's like, oh, right, you want to have meaning in your life? You want to get to know God? You want to be a person who prays? Oh, that's cute. That's such a cute idea. Here, why don't you just sit back down on your nice, comfortable chair and look at your screen again? You just go ahead and keep on being a joke, and we'll just entertain you, and you can amuse yourself to death. And we all have this auto we have to fight against. For many of us, we can look at our lives and we can look at areas of our lives where, frankly, auto is kicking our butt. We're kind of like this fat, overweight captain who never even gets out of his chair. He wants to go home. The captain says, right, I want to take this whole being a captain thing seriously. And he has this awakening moment. And we saw it in the clip. He goes, I've never done anything. That's all anyone on this blasted ship has ever done. Nothing. And he says this other line, he goes, I just don't want to survive, I want to live. He has this awakening moment. And as soon as he gets to that moment where he says, I just don't want to survive, I want to live, all of a sudden, auto doesn't become his sweet, pleasant helper, it becomes his enemy. You know, I have my, actually, can you toss that to me, Chief? Thanks, Joel. Just toss it to me. There you go. So for me, like many of us, this is my auto. It's amazing. I sit down. I'm like, right, okay. I have some time this morning. I just want to, open the Bible. What's a nice part of the Bible? Maybe Psalms. Yeah, Psalms are right there in the middle, and they're kind of easy to read. I'll just open the Psalm, maybe read through a Psalm, pray a little bit. As soon as I do that, what happens? All of a sudden, this becomes alive with notifications. Someone commented on your lady's Facebook status. He wants a reply. He put an angry face. Da, 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 da. All of a sudden, I'm flooded with WhatsApp messages. And I'm like, oh, right. Yeah. And all of a sudden, this becomes my auto. And unless I, like, turn it on airplane mode or just leave it in the next room, he is going to fight me tooth and nail anytime I go to pray. For you, it might not be a phone. It might be something else. We have something in our lives that we like, right? If I'm going to be serious about going home, spiritually speaking, if I'm going to connect with my heavenly home, I need to be serious about dealing with the auto in my life. Here's the second challenge. Invest in spiritual friendships. Who do you have that you have? Do you have anyone in your life who you can say, I have a serious spiritual friendship with someone? Someone who I don't just hang out with for the laughs. And like, I have friends like that. I have friends that I meet with. They make me laugh. They're wonderful. They're great. And I think all sorts of friends. We need all sorts of friendships. But how many of us have actually a deeper spiritual friendship? I remember a few years back talking. Within about a year, I met two different older gentlemen who just happened to be both pastors. And it was before I wasn't a pastor at the time. I was working for a charity helping immigrants at the time. And but I remember meeting both these pastors. One was in America. One was over here in the UK. And both of these guys, they're kind of maybe about retirement age. They're in their 60s. I was in my early 30s at the time. Both of these guys, when I asked them about their life, both of them expressed how lonely they were. That now as they were going into retirement, they really didn't have so many friends. And to me, that shocked me. I was like, but you're kind of leaders within your community. I mean, you kind of help lead the church. You have people around you all the time. And both of them said the same thing. Like, yeah, but we're always sort of giving out. People come to us with their problems, but we don't really have anybody that we can go to with their problems or with our problems. And I thought, huh. And I just thought, well, I don't know what I need to do, but I don't want to be like that when I'm in my 60s. What can I do now when I'm 30 so that I'm not like that in my 60s? And so I've tried, and I've not always been successful in it, but I've made it certainly my goal to try to invest in spiritual friendships. And sometimes for me, that means I drive up and down the country to spend a day with the person. Like, right, I haven't seen you in 2 or 3 months. Let's sit down and ask each other all the tough and difficult questions. Like, you know, how are you treating your spouse? And what about your kids? Are you spending the time you need with your kids? Where are you reading in the Bible right now? What's your prayer life like? Are you compromising morally or ethically in any way? Are you kind of cutting any corners that deep down you know you shouldn't be? Do we have relationships? Do we have anyone in our life who can ask us sort of the tougher questions? And for many of us, we think about it, no, maybe we don't have anyone. The challenge is, let's begin to look for these sort of people. Do we have someone like this? Let's invest in those relationships. One of the things, what we believe as a church, this is so important. This is one of the reasons we kind of talk a lot about our midweek groups. Like, if you come here on a Sunday morning, we're thrilled. We're so glad that you come here, and we love our band, and we certainly hope to try to give out some good teaching and everything. But you can come in here and sit there and do and say nothing, drink some coffee, and leave, and nobody really knows you. And never form any deeper relationships. And so we have these home groups. We have a home group that meets on a Tuesday and one that meets on a Thursday. And we have like a ladies group that meets on a Wednesday morning. And we're kind of trying to build up our youth group a bit. So why? So we can have real spiritual friendships. It matters if you're a teenager. It matters if you're in your 70s or 80s. It matters all throughout life that we have these sorts of relationships.